Welcome to another episode of the Real Estate Gals Podcast. Sharon Vornholt is your host and the creator of the Louisville Gals Real Estate Blog, where you will learn how to become a savvy real estate investor, make money, build streams of passive income, and create a lifestyle and a business you love. Whether you're a seasoned real estate investor or just getting started, this show is for you. Now, let's talk real estate investing.
This is Sharon Vornholt of the Louisville Gals Real Estate Blog, here today with another episode of Let's Talk Real Estate Investing. I have a great show for you today. My guest is my friend and fellow real estate investor, Mike Butler. Mike grew up right here in Louisville, Kentucky, near Churchill Downs. He began investing in fixer-uppers and renting them out to make extra money while working his full-time job as an undercover police detective. It didn't take him long to figure out that real estate was his ticket to wealth and long-term financial security. Mike is a two-term past president of the Kentuckiana Real Estate Investors Association. He sat on the board of National REIA for 3 years. He is the author of Landlording on Autopilot, which was the number one bestseller on Amazon. Mike has been featured in Money Magazine, Wall Street Journal Radio, and he's a much sought-after coach, speaker, and trainer at real estate seminars across the country. It's great to have you here today, Mike.
Thank you, Sharon, for inviting me. I'm really looking forward to it.
Let's start out by having you tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Well, first of all, I'm a hubby and a dad first, and I always like to put that in there because that's why we do what we do, including you, is to get the benefits from real estate for ourselves and our family. And I think you'll agree with that. But outside of that, well, a little bit about myself is I grew up on the wrong side of the tracks as a simple version. Yeah, the poor side of town, but Churchill Downs, oldest of seven kids, and we never had any local mentors or superstars of success to model after or to idolize. All that stuff was on TV. So the kids I went to school with, their parents, they worked in factories. They had worked for electricians or carpenters, things like that. Not one of them was a formally educated, certified, like CPA, attorney, doctor, anything like that. So that was the environment that I grew up in. But I always had this some kind of internal motivation and drive to be successful in life. I got a paper out in the seventh grade, and then, of course, cutting grass and painting houses and garages and building little garages while I was still in high school. And all that stuff, it just sort of came, I'm not going to say it came natural, but that drive was in me. I didn't want to grow up like I don't want my family or my kids to grow up like I did. Mm-hmm. And so 1980, when I got hired as a full-time police officer in my town, and as you mentioned, I worked my way up to do long-term undercover investigations and focusing on murder-for-hire contract killings and organized crime. And Sharon, I'm pretty sure that you knew me back then. Could you describe what I looked like back then when we met at Masterson's?
Oh, it was kind of scary. You were definitely in the
cover. People were scared to come up to me even at the meeting. So and I had long hair down to where almost my buttocks and in the backside, but to wear a long ponytail. Had a mullet is what my kids would call it. I wore bib overalls, black T-shirts, hung around motorcycle gangs, things like that. And even with a handicap like that, I was still able to grow a pretty substantial real estate empire that allowed me to have true financial independence. And my desire to do that, I simply wanted something to supplement my police pension. So instead of going to work in a church picnic or guard a construction site or sit in a bank trading your hours for dollars, I was ready, willing, and able to do something now that I could invest my time, energy, and effort in, and then set it and forget it. That was my original mindset. And then these things would grow and get paid off by the time I retired. It would double or triple my pension. That was my original goal there.
Mm-hmm. That's a really an awesome story. I'm just curious, knowing at what you look like, and Mike would have to put up a picture to really, really understand just how he looked. How in the world did you talk to sellers and not scare the daylights out of them?
That's an excellent question, and I'm glad that you asked that, because as I described that as a handicap, I can tell you this is a true story. This has happened to me. As you know, being a real estate investor and with working your full-time job, your time is very precious, along with being a dad, going to the kids' basketball games, brownies, Girl Scouts, what have you, and working the job itself, overtime, and going to court. So our time was very, very precious. Well, I might schedule a FSBO appointment, meet a seller at their house or a house for sale on the way home from work. So I'd travel there, I'd go up and knock on the door. You'd hear them walk into the door, and they look to the people, and they'd see me, and they'd say, I'm calling the police. And they would be frightened by my appearance. And, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, lady, you know, I am the police. And but where I overcame that handicap, Sharon, is when I would talk to people. And I developed and polished and created, back when I was a plainclothes detective, and even in uniform, a way to talk to people, including bad guys, that would allow them and encourage them. It's like pushing a button to get them to throw up. Now, my definition of throwing up is, you know, they got this problem, they got this cancer inside, and if I can find the right button to push mentally, well, then they'll start talking.
Mm-hmm.
And so I figured out how to do that because old school, being a plainclothes police detective, you'd have to grab your little fingerprint kit and the cameras and go out and interview people and try to track down stolen property. And you know what? That's brutal. That's like chasing short sales and foreclosures. But what I would rather do, okay, or like a fox. You seen the fox hunt pictures of those? So how many hound dogs do you have chasing how many foxes?
Mm-hmm.
Hundreds of hound dogs chasing how many foxes?
One.
Okay. And remember the folks in the red coat sitting on the horses?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the banks. Those are the lenders. Those are HUD. Those are whatever. Okay. So it's not fun to do that. Okay. But what I found out even with the bad guys and the criminals is let's just go straight to the horse and get it straight from the horse's mouth. So I'd go and pick them up and I polished this skill and ability. So much so that they would tell me everything they did, who they did it with, why they did it, where the stuff was, in addition to how to the other places that they did that I did not know about.
That's hilarious.
Okay. And so they didn't write down the addresses, so I'd have to put them in my car, ride them around. And so they would tell me all this stuff after I, what they call, Mirandize them. Okay. Yeah, you have the right to get an attorney and everything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law, blah, 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 that you see on TV. But I polished this skill. And one of the phrases that I would use, and this worked a lot of the time, say, okay, Elmo, you just got caught and wrapped up in this burglary, okay? Now, right now, okay, you can tell me everything you did and tell me your side of the story. And you've been through the court system. You know what's going to happen. What's going to happen after you get into the court system? What's your attorney going to let you say? And Elmo will say, he ain't going to let me say nothing. I said, that's my point. So if you want to give out your version and try to show that you're a human being and that maybe you show some remorse or screwed up or this and that, it could go a long way in your favor.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, they would do that, and they would talk and share their stories and all this. And what I found out, it made my job so much easier. Couldn't you envision that?
Yeah.
Instead of going out there and beating the streets, looking at the crime scene and trying to get fingerprints, running down to the jail to try to match up some fingerprints with so-called suspects and all. Holy cow, get it out of the horse's mouth. And the other thing is, bad guys hang out with what?
Other bad guys.
Bingo, just like golfers, okay? So you want to get yourself some brownie points? Tell me what else is going on in the hood, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what I did, okay, I became an expert at not interrogations, that's politically incorrect, but interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And I would get calls 2 a.m, hey, so-and-so not passing the polygraph, but they won't talk. So they get me to interview people, and then they would talk. And what was kind of neat is I took that same let's call it personal communication skills, if you will, interviewing skills, mm-hmm. and I applied it to my real estate business. And so now I took that, and every deal that I've done, Sharon, has a motivated seller. And I'll bet every deal you have done has a motivated seller.
It does.
Okay, so you need to figure out how to identify a motivated seller real quick, and we can do that in 90 seconds. And so I would identify a motivated seller, and I take those principles of how I deal with people, okay? And a motivated seller, they got a problem, right?
Right.
And so they need to sell that property to solve all or a major part of that problem. And so they have a cancer inside of them too. And if you see these bandit signs all over town and in your town that say, we buy houses, go ahead and call up some of those, a 1-800 number, or it might be a local number, and see how they treat you. Pretend like you're the seller and you're calling up on these answering services and see how they treat you. Do they just go through and ask you a whole bunch of questions? And here's what you're saying. Yes, no, 1200, I think so, yes, no, no, yes, 1500. You're not saying anything. It makes you feel like you're a number. Okay? So I allow this motivated seller to throw up. Tell me what's going on. You know, how can I help you? And if you let them throw up, just like your kids, and you can remember this when our kiddos were younger. I remember Rachel one day, she came in from school, and she's just throwing a fit, and she's carrying on. She's throwing in some cuss words as well. Then she goes up to her room. Comes back down about 40 minutes later, calm as can be. Apologize. I'm sorry, Dad. And I never would tell her to shut up. Okay, let them vent, let them throw up, because you know what? You're getting that cancer out of your belly. And when they throw up and get that cancer out of their belly, whoever they throw up on gets credit for it.
Mm-hmm.
You ever notice that?
Yep, I have.
So Sharon, you find a motivated seller, if you just simply listen to them throw up, they're going to like Sharon because you're the only investor that listened to them.
Yeah, I agree.
Allowed them to, yeah. So even looking ugly, I think my communication skills on the interviewing and things like that set me apart from my competition. It actually created loyalty between me and my seller. And you know Jay Long, for example, and Dave Halpern, they went in behind me at times and offered as much as a $5,000 more, and the sellers would stick with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great testament. And, you know, I tell people all the time, you have to just sit back and listen and let them get it off their chest, whatever that is. And when you're talking to sellers, I think you nailed it too. You cannot, it's got to be a conversation. It can't be an interview with yes, no answers and just about the numbers.
Yes.
So how long did you continue to work as an undercover police detective before you became a full-time real estate investor?
That's a great question there, Sharon. And actually, as my real estate business grew while I had my full-time job, I thought of myself as a full-time investor with a part-time job as an undercover police detective. I was raised old school, that blue-collar environment. You probably were too, where my daddy taught me to use my hands, change the oil in your truck, son, so you can save money. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so having a job was part of your identity.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a huge, huge step for me to consider retiring early because of my real estate. But the investigations that I was doing, remember those?
I do. They were dangerous.
Yeah, they're very dangerous. And we were hooked up with a group, and then they had a contract out to kill me. And my wife said, "That's it. You got to go. Okay, you got to get out of there." Said, "We got too much going on, this real estate stuff. That police detective job, you know that it's fun and you like to do that, but I can't handle the stress. And we're not going to do it." So my truck got shot up, and she said, "It's me or the police department."
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to make that decision, and that's what caused me to retire early.
Mm-hmm.
And does that help answer that question?
Well, it does. It does. And I know that you were juggling things for a long time. They're working a lot of hours because you were essentially doing two full-time jobs. Plus trying to be a family man. So once you left your job then, or once you were no longer a police detective, I know that you owned a lot of houses before you ever even hired your first full or your first part-time person, who, as I remember, was Shirley. We all remember Shirley.
Right.
Tell everybody a little bit about that. How'd you juggle all of that?
Okay. It's interesting you use the word juggle because I want to can that word, and I'd like to say systems. Now, did I get to a point of juggling? Yeah, when I got to the point of juggling, I had to revamp my systems.
Right.
But I'd like for you to think of your life, okay? Let's think of your life, your daily or weekly life activities as being a pie, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And think of it like a computer pie, and we're going to chop up slots of it. Well, what I found out is when I had my full-time job, well, that might take up a quarter of the pie. And then I might have being dad took up this much of the pie, and being a hubby took up that much of the pie. Then I'd have a little bit of the pie for myself. And then I might have a little bit going on doing stuff at church or with school, things like that. And then I had stuff for our local RIA group. And then I had a piece of pie that I would use and focused on buying. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Being a real estate investor, to me, was buying deals.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened was I built systems and increased my marketing on the buying side. And to be more efficient, you know, I had a goal to buy 100 houses a year while working my full-time job. And I fell short, okay? I only did 84 the first year, but I added 52 more properties to my rental portfolio. And what happened, the things that I was not aware of, because I was greener than a gourd, you experienced this too. Well, if you're buying and you're buying and holding, well, what's going to happen is, remember that piece of pie?
Mm-hmm.
You're out of room on there, but here's something that's going to sneak up and bite you in the butt. Let's call it landlording property management. That takes time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that takes time. So where does it fit? Well, if you're not careful, you'll end up with a triangle instead of a circle that will roll. You want that life wheel to be able to roll. And so mine got lopsided because landlording kicked in. And then about the same time I realized that kind of stuff was going on, well, then here come tax time.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't understand any of it. So now I've basically got to shut down everything else that's going on. My buying machine literally stopped, although my expenses kept going out the door. I focused and got prepared at tax time. And so when I went through that, the first very big cumbersome time, I said, I got to have a system that makes this easy for me. I got to have a system that does this. I can't do it all. And so that's when I really got focused on polishing systems to make my life easier and to keep my life wheel in balance so that it was smooth and it would roll.
So what was
that? How many houses did we own before I hired a part-time person? I'm sorry, owned and operated 75 plus rental properties. And was still growing aggressively, buying 2.25 deals per week.
Okay, so 75, you owned 75 houses before you ever hired anyone to help you.
No, 75 rental properties, mostly houses. We had apartments, too, and some commercial.
Okay. That's a lot of houses, a lot of properties.
Yes, it is.
So
okay.
What was your first system then? It had had to do with landlording, right? So your first system, the first system you created, what was that?
The first system I created, I had to go back and tear my scabs or wounds or my scars, reopen them. But I had a full-time job, as you know,
mm-hmm.
and my real estate office was in my basement. Unfinished mm-hmm. basement, had a carpet remnant down there, an old used desk from somewhere. I actually got a computer back then with 3.5-inch floppies, but I kept all my stuff. It was basically paper. So I had a combination of milk crates, a 2-drawer filing cabinet with folders, and didn't really know how to do anything. But what I learned was I could not own and operate, and I didn't write this down, so I'm going to guess somewhere between the 5 to 12 property mark of owning and operating those rental properties,
mm-hmm.
I needed to have a system that not only could it keep everything current, but it allowed me to go back and review and create reports and see what my results were to measure those.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first system that I created, instead of running all this with paper and legal pads, folders, shoeboxes and all, was what is today known as the InvestorBooks Pro system with tenant tracking. And it's the only complete system for real estate investors using QuickBooks Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And I had tried a couple of softwares then, but they were all designed for those landlords who manage properties for others for a fee. They're like $15,000 a year just
right.
to use it.
Yeah.
And, you know, here, no, I don't want that. So my little bruh, I was using Quicken at the time, figured out how to use that, and I blew it up. Too many accounts, too many whatever. And so they encouraged me to go to Office Depot and get QuickBooks Pro. So I did that just to buy a Band-Aid. And so what I did is I took the thing that I wanted to know, like I needed to be able to push a button and see the status of all my work orders, when they were issued, are they outstanding, what it was about. And I do that. I can push one button and see all that real prompt, real quick. I can bill all of my tenants in one fell swoop, set them up on recurring rent payments, move-out inspections, move-in inspections. That's pretty cumbersome on all the documentation that you need. And so I built that for me, for Mike Butler, the investor, the investor who has a full-time job as an undercover police detective, just wanting to polish his own systems. So I created that. And then at tax time, you know, we get these questions like this. Here's what blew me out of the water. Mike Grennan, who's my CPA then, he said, hey, Mike, what properties did you buy this year? I said, I don't know. I bought a bunch. He says, well, I need to have the HUD ones, the closing statements, to know which ones they are. I didn't have a clue. You know how I went back and found out what properties I bought? I took my man purse in with our Franklin Covey day-to-day thing, week by the week. And I had to flip through all those and look for the closing dates on properties I purchased.
Yeah, I've done that.
So then, yeah, and so it's like, gosh, then you had to pull all the files and do this and that. So I said, you know what, I got to fix this. So I started segmenting the properties that I buy by year.
Mm-hmm.
And so even today, I can go back and look at properties I bought in the early 90s. And so I polished my systems like that for me, Mike Butler, the investor, to make my life easier, to make my life more efficient, my real estate business more efficient, working smarter, not harder. And then what happened was Mike Grennan, this was around 2001, 2002, he wanted me to speak at a high-dollar conference for CPAs on a regional level, showing them how I use QuickBooks. And I said, why? So we can teach these other folks how to do it to make more money off Mike Butler and Sharon and their other clients.
Mm-hmm.
I said, why don't I teach the clients how to do this so they can save money from you guys. And so, long story short, I took my own real files, removed all the transactions, kept the same chart of accounts set up for you, the same forms, the same templates, everything in there, and you plug in your properties, your tenants, your loans, and you're off to the races. And holy cow, I thought it would be cumbersome and complicated because I felt weird. But lo and behold, Sharon, what I found out is that all real estate investors are weird like me and you.
Pretty much.
So that was the first system that I created. And then they wanted to know about my other systems that I had. And so because of that, I turned those into live training events, boot camps, and home training systems. But that's how it got started. That was the very first one.
So what are some of the things that can be systemized in your real estate investing business that really should be systemized? Obviously, all of the property management. Well, what other things, what other systems should people be looking at creating if they don't have them?
Okay, what are those things that can be systematized in every real estate investing business? Well, first of all, remember that life circle, that piece of pie?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'd like for you to draw your own circle. Okay, and you might have to hit the pause button listening to this. So hit the pause button and chop up your week of activities by the number of hours or percentages of what you're responsible to do during that. Now, Sharon, you're an expert on that, and you know exactly what I'm talking about. Marketing for buying, marketing for renting, and marketing for selling.
Right.
Just imagine putting a ton of that. I can say this, like my rental business, okay, and my buying business. My rental business, 99.9% of it is on autopilot, and it's very effective from the website. So no longer do you have to take calls and sound like you're working a McDonald's drive-thru. We've got folks, if they were looking for a home to rent, they go to the website. And if you want to see it in action, is it okay to share that with them?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. It's V as in Victor, I-S-T-A, Vista. Okay, it's like Visa, the charge, the credit card with a T in it, VistaKY.com. And you can see that they can go there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They can see the inside of the properties. They can check out the neighborhood, read all the frequently asked questions. We have audio with those as well. They can even pay for their they can pay their application fee and submit a rental application online without me or any of my office staff getting involved. Now, is that a system?
That is a system. And, boy, that is something that, you know, when I talk about these one-man shops, and sometimes they don't want to take the time up front to set up these systems, but, boy, does it make a huge difference in your lifestyle if you can set these things up and once and done, sort of. That's just awesome.
Okay. Yeah, so how many of you use Amazon? You think a lot of listeners, investors on the call use Amazon?
Oh, I'm sure they do.
I do. You do. Okay, right? What happens after you buy something at Amazon? What do they pop in your face?
Well, they send you your purchase. They email you.
No, I'm getting way back to the front with the very, very, you order, you hit this order now, it processes your order and go boom. Now what? What they'll do is they'll say people that bought this also bought that. They want to upsell you.
Yeah, upsell. Yeah.
That's right, true. On the spot. You know, maybe McDonald's started that. You want to super fry with it or supersize it or whatever they did, okay? But it works. Okay, Amazon's doing it today. People that bought this also bought this, okay? So I took that, what I saw that was working in the market, and I know you do the very same thing, keeping your eyes and ears peeled for new creative ideas. So imagine this. After they fill out their online application, they're very impulsive wanting that house right now. 3:30 in the morning, they're filling out their application. Okay? Mm-hmm. When they hit that submit button, guess where it takes them? To an upsell.
To an upsell, too.
Okay? All right. They can put a deposit to hold on that property. Okay? And then we got the terms spelled out on that. They can even put some money up if they want to pursue a rent with option to buy. We've had folks put up as much as $3,000 online, okay, without lifting a finger, answering a phone, or doing anything. Wake up in the morning and see that in your email box.
Wow.
And it gets deposited into your bank account automatically. This old school stuff, using clipboards and getting an application fee, and then, yeah, you probably put it in your pocket, but no, we report all of our income, and it all goes to the bank. So this, but systems, that's just one example. Just how a system can be life-changing. Remember, Chris McCarty says life-changing event for him.
Right.
He's got more time to do than more time to do stuff since he's ever begun investing in real estate. So, office operations can be systematized, bookkeeping systems, property management systems, along with multiple and extra income streams using the very same resources and overhead that you have in place right now.
Yeah, that's an important thing for people to understand. The very things that you use often have affiliate programs, and you can make extra income just by using the things that you use and telling other people about them.
Yeah, in fact, guys, I'm gonna let Kat out of the bag here a little bit. Sharon and I discussed that for probably 20 minutes before we did this call.
Yeah, we did, and I think that's almost another whole topic. So I think everybody can see how just by doing the things that you mentioned, it frees up a whole bunch of time, which takes us back again to creating a lifestyle business. Boy, it's just no fun to be a workaholic. And if you can get things to where they're systematized, and in most cases, I think you actually increase your, well, I know you do, you increase your income. Once you step back and have a system, everything just gets better. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. In fact, I'm going to let out another little fact, and this is true, of what Sharon's doing today. You're listening to Sharon Vornholt right now because she has learned, okay, how to market. And she knows that just doing real estate deals, yeah, they're great. We make good chunks of cash here and there, and passive income is wonderful and awesome. But she's got a ton of information between her ears, and that's called knowledge, and that's called experience, and it's called expertise. So now what she's done is she's created her own little extra income stream here by marketing herself and helping other investors at the very same time. Now, isn't that wonderful? Now, just imagine this. If you could rub a genie bottle about life, imagine doing something that you're passionate about, that you love doing, you wouldn't consider it a job, and you get paid for it. Isn't that what everybody dreams about?
That is for sure.
So I bet that Sharon's having fun doing this stuff, and she's getting paid for it, too.
It just doesn't get any better than that, does it?
Awesome. Okay.